Imagine, like, a high-intensity ICU. A patient is crashing, and a nurse who just transferred from another ward needs immediate access to their electronic health records.
Right, to check for fatal drug interactions or something.
Exactly. But instead of saving a life, that nurse is just staring at a lock screen.
Yeah.
Right, it's waiting for an IT ticket to clear.
Which is a terrifying thought.
It really is.
Yeah.
So today, we're exploring the invisible corporate machinery that ensures that never happens. We're taking a deep dive into the absolute backbone of enterprise security, which is role-based access control.
Yes, yeah, specifically how it functions inside a SailPoint Identity IQ.
Right, because it is a critical foundation.
Yeah.
I mean, managing digital identities at scale is, frankly, an absolute nightmare for modern enterprises.
Oh, completely. We are going to decode how large organizations like actually solve the chaos of figuring out who gets access to what.
And why trying to do it manually is just completely unsustainable at this point.
Yeah, because the scale of the problem is difficult to overstate. We are talking about global companies dealing with, you know, tens of thousands of employees.
And contractors, right?
Yes, contractors, temporary vendors, even automated service accounts that all need very specific permissions.
Wow.
So granting access to databases, cloud applications, and on-premises systems like one user at a time, it's physically impossible.
The math just simply breaks down.
Exactly. I mean, if a company has 10,000 employees and 500 different software applications, the administration cost of manually flipping switches for every single new hire is astronomical.
Right. And beyond the cost, I'd imagine the margin for human error is huge.
Massive. It creates massive cybersecurity vulnerabilities. And that is the exact problem role-based access control, or RBAC, was designed to solve.
Now, this framework has been around for a while, though. Looking at the sources we have, the formalization goes back to, what, 1992?
Well,
with David Ferriolo and Rick Kuhn?
It does, yeah. And it was later standardized as ANSI in CSITES 359.
Catchy name.
Right. But it had crucial input from NIST, you know, the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Oh, okay. Why did NIST get involved?
Well, early network access was basically a Wild West. Vendors all handled permissions differently, so by creating a formalized standard, they established a mathematical model that actually proved who had access to what.
Which is a big deal.
It was revolutionary at the time. The core concept they cemented was that you assign access based on a person's job role rather than, like, assigning individual entitlements to the person by hand.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to make sure I'm getting it. If we go back to our hospital scenario, instead of configuring the central database and the EHR and the pharmacy ordering system for 50 individual nurses,
which would take forever.
Right. Instead of that, you define a mathematical registered nurse role exactly once.
Yes.
And then every new nurse simply inherits that baseline access the moment they are hired.
That is the fundamental shift right there. Access becomes a reflection of how the business is organized.
So that they can actually do their jobs.
Yeah, exactly. When employees join, they are productive immediately. And just as importantly, when they leave the organization, tearing down that access isn't this massive scavenger hunt across 50 systems.
Right. You don't have to track down every single thing they touched.
No. The role is simply revoked, and all access drops simultaneously.
So it's like instead of carrying a giant keyring where you have to prove you deserve every single key at every single door, RBAC acts like a VIP wristband at a music festival.
I like that.
Right. That wristband automatically lets you into the main stage, the VIP tent, and the backstage area without anyone checking your pockets at every stop.
That's a great analogy.
But if I can push back on that for a second.
Sure.
If you are handing out these broad wristbands, aren't you expanding the risk? Like, bunching permissions together seems like a great way to accidentally give someone the keys to virtual rooms they don't actually need.
I get that. And that is a very common concern when people first look at role-based models. But when implemented correctly, RBAC enforces a principle called least privilege by design.
Least privilege.
Yeah. Because you are defining the role strictly based on the job function, users get exactly what they need to execute their duties. No more and no less.
Oh, I see. Which means you are actually shrinking the attack surface.
Dramatically. Like, if a hacker manages to compromise a specific nurse's account through a phishing email, The blast radius of that attack is strictly limited to the permissions of that registered nurse role.
Right, they can't suddenly get into the payroll system.
Exactly. The hacker cannot access the hospital's financial ledgers or the HR database because those permissions were never bundled into the nurse's profile to begin with.
That makes a lot of sense.
Without roles, employees tend to accumulate random access rights over years of, you know, requesting one-off permissions, which just creates massive sprawling vulnerabilities.
Okay, so knowing that roles simplify access makes total sense in theory. But it leads us directly to a very practical bottleneck.
Okay.
How does a software platform like SailPoint Identity IQ actually translate a messy human job description into hard technical database permissions?
Well, that translation gap is historically where identity governance programs collapse under their own weight. It's really hard.
Because humans and computers don't speak the same language.
Precisely. So Identity IQ solves this by engineering what they call a two-tier role model.
So the concept of a role is basically split in half.
Yes. At the top tier, you have your business roles. These represent the actual job functions or, you know, organizational responsibilities. Think accounts payable clerk or loan officer.
Mm-hmm.
This tier represents the desired state of access. It speaks the language of the business, meaning human resources and department managers actually understand what it means.
You know, that makes an analogy come to mind. The business role is essentially the menu at a restaurant.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Like HR comes in and orders the loan officer special.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to cook it. They just know what they want the employee to have.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. Which brings us to the bottom tier, right? The IT roles.
The kitchen.
Exactly, the kitchen. If the business role is the menu item, the IT role is the highly specific recipe. These encapsulate the actual system entitlements tied to specific software applications.
Okay, so give me an example.
So our business role was loan officer, but the IT role sitting underneath it might be Oracle ERP accounts payable module access with read-only permissions.
That is very specific.
Right. This represents the actual state of access, speaking the language of servers and databases.
That decoupling has to be a lifesaver for the business side. I mean, if the kitchen decides to change from Oracle to a brand new software system, the recipe changes, but the customer sitting at the table still just orders the loan officer special.
You nailed it. It insulates the business from technical churn. I mean, systems upgrade and migrate constantly, but because of this two-tier architecture, only the IT role has to be rewritten by the engineers to reflect the new software.
Wow.
The loan officer business role stays the exact same, so you don't have to retrain HR or rewrite your corporate access policies just because, you know, the database moved to the cloud.
That is super elegant. But I am struggling to see how this works for edge cases, though.
What do you mean?
Well, what if I am a loan officer who just needs a specific, highly sensitive piece of software, maybe once a year for an annual audit?
Okay, yeah.
If I order the loan officer special, do I just get permanent access to a high-risk system I barely use?
Uh-huh.
Because that seems to violate the least privilege rule we just talked about.
It would, yes. But Identity IQ accounts for that by distinguishing between required and permitted relationships within the business role.
Oh, so there are different types of relationships.
Exactly. The system doesn't force a rigid one-size-fits-all deployment. Required access is the mandatory baseline. It is provisioned automatically on day one when the business role is assigned.
But the permitted access is handled differently.
Right. Permitted access is optional. It is securely linked to the business role, but it is not granted by default.
Where does it go, though?
It sits in a self-service catalog. So if our loan officer needs that specialized audit software in December, they go to the catalog and request it.
Oh, I see.
The system looks at their profile, recognizes that their business role permits them to hold this software, and then dynamically routes the request for approval.
That is really smart. It streamlines the governance, but keeps that granular, restrictive layer of control intact.
Exactly.
But, you know, knowing the business role architecture is really only half the battle. Because a pristine menu doesn't matter if the customer gets up and moves to a different table without telling anyone.
That is very true.
We need to look at how these roles actually function when an employee navigates their career journey. Because nobody stays in the exact same box forever.
No, they don't. And the industry refers to this as the identity lifecycle, specifically the joiner, mover, lever workflow.
Joiner, mover, lever. Got it.
And to manage the complexity of a human career, Identity IQ utilizes a few specific role types beyond just the business and IT split we talked about.
Yeah, looking at the source breakdown here, There are birthright roles. Those seem pretty self-explanatory, right? Just day one baseline access that every single employee gets, regardless of their job.
Right, like your email account, your VPN access, the company intranet.
Okay.
Those are automatically triggered the moment an HR system, like Workday, feeds a new hire record into Identity IQ.
Makes sense.
Then you have elevated or privileged roles.
Those sound dangerous.
They are. These contain high-risk administrative rights, like the ability to alter server configurations or access source code.
So they need to be watched closely.
Very closely. These require isolation because from a cybersecurity standpoint, they are literally the keys to the kingdom and require intense continuous monitoring.
And the last one.
Finally, you have container roles, which are basically structural folders used to group other roles together just to keep the catalog organized.
Okay, so walking through the life cycle, I get hired. Mm-hmm. I'm a joiner. HR enters my data. The system triggers my birthright roles and my required business roles. I have my baseline access. Uh-huh. Years later, I quit. I'm a leaver. The platform receives the termination signal and just automatically deprovisions all those roles.
Clean and simple.
It is a clean, logical flow. But here's where it gets really interesting, I think. The mover phase.
Oh.
This has to be the most dangerous part of corporate life.
It is widely considered the single biggest vulnerability in most internal access models, without a doubt.
Because this is where access creep happens, right?
Yeah.
Let's say you switch from finance over to marketing. You get all your new marketing tools provisioned.
Hmm.
But you keep your old finance access because nobody in IT ever received a ticket telling them to take it away.
Exactly.
So over a 10-year career, as you move around the company, you basically mutate into this all-powerful super user.
What's fascinating here is that you have isolated the exact reason auditors fail enterprise companies during compliance checks.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Access creep is a massive liability. But Identity IQ's implementation of RBAC cures this dynamically.
Oh, so?
Well, when a user changes departments, their core identity attributes shift in the system, like their title changes, their manager changes, their cost center updates.
And that shift triggers a mechanism.
Exactly. It triggers an automatic reevaluation of their entire profile. The platform calculates the new access required for the marketing role and provisions it.
Okay.
But crucially, it identifies that the attributes tying the user to the finance role are gone. So the workflow engine actively reaches into the target systems and revokes the access linked to that old role.
Wow. So it aggressively prunes the tree.
It has to. And the platform actually goes a step further to catch anomalies. Identity IQ enforces scheduled certifications and manager reviews.
What does that mean for the managers?
It means even if an employee hasn't officially moved departments, managers are periodically forced by the system to review a dashboard and mathematically attest that the access their team holds is still strictly necessary.
Oh, I see.
It evolves identity governance from a reactive, ticket-driven chore into this proactive, continuous program.
But wait, where do these pristine roles come from, though? We have mapped out this perfect life cycle, but human organizations are chaotic.
Very chaotic.
I mean, if a company is buying this software, it usually means their current access is a disorganized mess.
Mm.
How do they actually figure out what these complex roles should be in the first place?
The process of defining them is called role engineering, and honestly, it is notoriously difficult.
I can imagine.
Large organizations frequently discover they need hundreds, sometimes thousands, of distinct roles to capture their workforce. So to solve this mathematically, Identity IQ deploys a really powerful feature called role mining.
Role mining. How does the mining actually work?
It approaches the chaos from two distinct angles. First, IT role mining analyzes the raw technical entitlements currently held across the entire user population.
Okay.
Think of it as drawing a massive Venn diagram layering the access rights of 1,000 employees over each other.
Sounds messy.
It is, but the system uses a configurable threshold algorithm. So if you set the threshold to 85%, the machine looks for overlaps. Where the circles overlap for 85% of those users, the machine draws a boundary and says, hey, this specific cluster of permissions is your candidate IT role.
Okay, that makes sense. And the second angle?
Business role mining. This builds the top tier groupings based on human identity attributes, like clustering people by department, physical location, or job title.
Right, the menu items.
Exactly. And running alongside both of these is entitlement analysis, which actively flags outliers.
What kind of outliers?
Well, if you have someone with highly unusual singular access compared to their peers in that Venn diagram, the system highlights that anomaly as a critical risk.
See, I have a major issue with this, though. I'm struggling to see how this works in reality.
Okay, lay it on me.
If I have an obscure job title that, let's say, only three people in a 10,000-person company share, how on earth does an algorithm build a role for me without breaking the system?
Right.
Furthermore, if a company's current access is a disorganized mess, isn't the machine just scanning the mess and formalizing it?
That is a very astute observation. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that is exactly why the platform absolutely forbids auto-creating roles based purely on algorithms.
But does...
Yes. The mining process only provides a candidate set of roles. The human element is the ultimate filter. Business stakeholders, HR representatives, and application owners, they must review, refine, and approve those data-driven suggestions.
Okay, so the algorithm does the heavy lifting, but humans have to apply actual logic to it.
Correct. If you just let the machine build custom roles for every tiny variation in access, like your obscure three-person job title, you suffer from what's called role explosion.
Role explosion. Sounds bad.
It is. You end up with thousands of overlapping microscopic roles, which is just as unmanageable as having no roles at all.
Right.
So the partnership between the mathematical data mining and human refinement is what actually creates a clean, logical role catalog.
Got it. And once you have that clean catalog,
yeah.
How does this structure actually prevent an employee from committing internal fraud? Because having the right role doesn't mean someone won't use it maliciously, right?
Right. It prevents fraud through a strict enforcement mechanism called segregation of duties, or SOD.
Segregation of duties.
Yeah. The defining example is in accounting. No single person should ever be able to both create a new vendor in the system and approve payments to that exact same vendor.
Because that is the easiest way to embezzle money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just invent a fake paper company, put it in the system, and then write yourself a check.
Precisely. That is known as a toxic combination.
Toxic combination.
Yes. And because Access and Identity IQ is bundled into defined roles, the platform evaluates SOD proactively.
Before they get the access.
Exactly. If an employee requests a new role, the workflow engine analyzes if that new role, combined with their existing access, creates a toxic combination. If it does, the system literally blocks the addition of the entitlement.
Wow.
It catches the violation before the request can even be routed to a manager for approval.
So the system mathematically prevents you from holding the keys to commit that specific type of fraud.
It does. And this proactive enforcement isn't just an IT best practice. I mean, it is a strict legal requirement.
Really? Like compliance stuff?
Oh, absolutely. If you are handling financial data under SOX, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which is designed to prevent corporate accounting fraud or patient data under HIPAA or credit card info under PCI DSS, auditors don't want to hear that you try to keep things secure.
They want proof.
They require documented mathematical proof that toxic combinations are impossible to achieve. And the RBAC audit trails provide that exact proof.
You know, thinking about all this, the perimeter of the enterprise is completely different today than it was even 5 years ago.
Oh, completely.
We have massive remote workforces, multi-cloud environments, and third-party vendors logging in from everywhere. How is this RBAC model evolving to survive the landscape of, say, 2026 and beyond?
Well, the momentum behind identity governance is just accelerating rapidly. Financial analysts currently value the global identity governance and administration market in the high single-digit billions.
Wow.
And they are projecting double-digit growth straight into the 2030s. The reason for that explosion is exactly what you just mentioned. The physical perimeter of the enterprise has essentially vanished.
Right, because security used to mean a firewall around a physical office building in a downtown high-rise.
And now security is identity. This is the foundational pillar of zero trust architecture.
Zero trust, meaning?
Zero trust assumes no implicit trust. It assumes everyone and everything is a potential threat until proven otherwise, verifying every single action.
Okay.
RBAC is the skeleton of that architecture, but it is currently evolving into a highly dynamic hybrid model. We are seeing a structural blend of RBAC with ABA, which is attribute-based access control.
ABAC, how does layering attributes change the mechanics of the access?
Well, traditional RBAC says you hold the loan officer role, therefore you have access to the core banking application.
Yikes.
ABAC layers real-time environmental context over that rule. It says, okay, you are a loan officer, but you are currently logging in from an unrecognized mobile device connected to a public Wi-Fi network in a foreign country at 3 a.m. So ABA allows the access decisions to factor in that real-time risk, dynamically restricting or adjusting the permissions, even if the user holds the correct underlying role.
So what does this all mean? It sounds like the old days of saying, you know, hey, I know a guy in IT who can do me a favor and give me server access under the table. Those days are completely dead and gone.
They absolutely have to be. What the industry calls identity sprawl, which is driven by hybrid work setups, complex multi-cloud infrastructure, and the massive proliferation of non-human identities like automated bots, it makes manual governance a physical impossibility.
Too much data.
Way too much. The sheer volume of access requests is simply too large for human IT teams to process.
Which means artificial intelligence must be stepping into this space to handle the volume.
Oh, machine learning is already taking over the heavy lifting. AI is actively assisting with those schedule entitlement reviews we talked about. It uses pattern recognition to flag anomalous access that human managers simply cannot spot in a giant spreadsheet.
That makes total sense.
It is even translating complex access data into natural language to explain to department heads exactly why a user has a specific permission.
But even with AI taking over the analysis, the core RBAC concept doesn't disappear, does it?
Not at all. Foundational RBAC knowledge remains one of the most highly sought-after skills in cybersecurity, because even when an advanced AI is monitoring the environment, those business and IT roles remain the structural backbone upon which all smarter, automated governance is built.
The AI needs a blueprint.
Exactly. And AI needs a structured mathematical model to optimize, and that structure is role-based access control.
Well, looking at all of this, RBAC and SailPoint Identity IQ is clearly so much more than just back office IT plumbing. It really acts as the vital invisible shield protecting patient health records, corporate financial data, and, you know, your personal information out in the world.
It's critical infrastructure.
It is. By translating messy human job functions into precise technical security through a two-tier architecture, organizations can fully automate the joiner mover lever lifecycle. They can enforce least privilege, dynamically cure access creep, and mathematically prove their compliance with global regulations.
It fundamentally changes how businesses operate securely.
Yeah. So the next time you get promoted, switch teams, or start a new job, and you sit down at your desk and magically have exactly the software tools you need on day one without staring at a blank screen waiting for a ticket to clear, you will know exactly the complex automated dance of role mining and IT provisioning that made it happen.
You are experiencing enterprise identity governance functioning exactly as designed.
Absolutely. But, you know, it does leave us with a fascinating, maybe slightly unsettling thought about where this technology is heading. Yeah. As we move rapidly toward a future where artificial intelligence continuously monitors our attributes, our daily habits, and dynamically recommends our IT roles, could we reach a point where AI understands the granular nuances of our daily job functions better than our human managers do?
That is a very real possibility.
Right. If a machine learning algorithm is ultimately deciding what tools you need to do your work based on billions of real-time data patterns, who is really defining your role in the company? Is it human resources or is it the machine? Something to think about.